It is said that the witching hours are when all the dark things come out from hiding and have the world all to themselves. A world seen through devil eyes. A world of evil and filth. A world of lunacy. Join us. Join Late Night Psychorama.
Good evening, everyone. It's Late Night Psychorama, where you will get two movies that have nothing to do with each other, a la the glory days of the drive-in. There will be spoilers. If you do not want the movie spoiled, please do not listen to us right now. Go watch the movies and then come back and listen to us.
Shut
up. We want them to listen. I'm Joe.
I'm Andrew.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Jonathan.
And with us today, we have Erica from Customers Also Watched. Hi, Erica.
Hello again.
Hello again.
Hello.
From sunny Austin, Texas.
Again.
Yes.
Yes.
It is sunny. It's 80 degrees today.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Damn.
Oh, yeah, is John's here, too. it is not normal for January, no.
What is it up there?
It's like a comfortable 40.
Yeah, which is out of season. Like, it shouldn't...
It should be in the teens right now.
Yeah, normally it's, like, freezing cold at this point, but...
And there would be some snow, potentially.
It's been fairly warmish relative. Before we get into the movies, does anybody have anything they'd like to talk about? Anything they've watched?
Oh, I had the privilege of seeing The Color Out of Space with one of those. Afterwards, they had a stream of the Nicolas Cage and Richard Stanley interviewed by like Patton Oswalt.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked out of that part, but I don't think I've ever seen the movie. I don't think I've ever seen a more solid rendition of source material by H.P. Lovecraft. So, Joe, it might be really up your alley.
Like, okay. Does Cage behave himself, or does he act like a lunatic?
You know, I would say it's a little bit underutilized. The Nicolas Cage at play in that movie isn't necessarily him going off the handle to the degree with which he can go off the handle.
Okay.
He's the subdued Nicolas Cage.
All right, well, good. That's good.
Daddy Cage.
I mean, I don't mind Nicolas Cage being a nut job, but, you know, when I'm watching something I actually care about watching, then, you know, I would like him to... You know, take a tranquilizer or something.
Just contain himself a little bit.
Yeah, settle down.
hey, if he settled down in Face Off, then we wouldn't have Face Off.
Right, but Face Off is a movie where, you know, he can go, you know, chew the scenery as much as possible and it'd be fun, but in a Lovecraft adaptation, that would be very not in tone with the source material, as you alluded to.
Right, totally. Yeah, I was kind of surprised how few liberties were taken in the movie. I don't know, did anybody else see it?
I saw it.
Yeah?
I strongly disagree with your opinion.
About what? Which part?
All of it.
Cage specifically. I think there's some great practical effects in it, but maybe it was just me waiting for Cage to cage out that... And when he did, I was like, there it is. That took me out of it.
Really?
I'm not super fond of it, no.
Yeah,
I keep seeing
really
the trailer. They keep playing it every time I'm at the Alamo, which I've gone to like 20 times since I've been here. And it looks like a Lovecraft adaptation from the asshole who made Hardware. And that's why I don't want to see it.
It's Hardware is so good, John. You're just wrong, but it's okay to be wrong.
Oh, Andrew, good call for not falling into that fucking dumb movie shit.
Andrew called Fractals MS Paint art. So, you know, we got to get this guy some LSD stat and then ask him about the MS Paint going on behind his eyelids.
You ever hear these guys? They're called Motorhead. It's the worst cameo in a fucking movie ever.
It seems to be the only thing you ever talk about with this movie.
Because that's like the blatant, like, I mean, there's
John,
a lot to go
keep
on.
Keep in mind that in 1990, it probably wasn't that blatant to a lot of people watching it.
That's also a great point. Joe,
I would imagine Motorhead were bigger in 1990 than they are today.
Amongst sci-fi moviegoers?
Yeah.
No, I disagree with you completely.
Amongst cult movie weirdos, yes, definitely. Motorhead were not a rare band to weird people who would be renting the weird sci-fi
splatter
movie.
By Miramax.
Motorhead did not have any real mainstream acceptance either. So how many moviegoers were really gonna know what Ace of Spades was?
Oh my
also,
god!
If that's
I can't
the only
believe
thing
you're
that could take you out of that movie. You are missing
no,
good
no.
Times.
The fact that it just feels like a sci-fi original movie.
You like Game of Thrones? Get out.
Yeah, the first four seasons of Game of Thrones are much better than Hardware.
That's like Xena Warrior Princess for perverts.
No.
Yeah.
But
like
I mean,
Dark
I agree.
Shadows for people that like that miss sword and sorcery.
Don't
I mean,
fucking
that's the only thing
Dark
they have
Shadows.
In
But yeah, I didn't really like The Color Out of Space. With as true to the adaptation as I saw it being, it wasn't enough Richard Stanley for me. I wanted some more liberties to be taken. I wanted some wackier Nicolas Cage. I wanted some more. Yeah, I wanted so much more Nicolas Cage.
Wow. So speaking of great actors who act wild, I saw The Human Tornado on the big screen the other day.
Nice.
So you like Rudy Ray Moore? Rudy Ray Moore is an actor?
Yes. No, Rudy Ray Moore is an entertainer.
Yeah.
And he is entertaining.
And it was a blast. And he is, and I think The Human Tornado is the perfect title for a movie about Rudy Ray Moore because he's just a fucking fireball of energy.
Did anybody watch the Eddie Murphy movie about him?
I've been meaning to. Erica, no. You saw that, right?
Yeah, I saw that at Fantastic Fest. It's really good.
You liked it?
I did.
I didn't dislike it, but it was just kind of like, it's just like a crowd-pleasing, nice movie. There's no drama.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think a lot of my favoritism towards it is probably because I saw it at the fest in a packed theater, you know, and everyone was having a great time with it.
Yeah.
I don't think it's anything special, but I think at the very least, like if it brings more attention to Rudy Ray Moore in his movies, I think it's done its job. And I think it's Eddie Murphy better than he has been in, what are the 80s now? 40 years
oh
ago.
Oh, my God, yeah.
40
years
what? Ago. You don't like Donkey? I mean, it was Eddie Murphy. It was definitely like charming. He was charming in the role. It fit the role. And I think that's a perfect, like you hit the nail on the head there. It's like as long as it's like putting Rudy Ray Moore out there into the public consciousness, it's definitely doing its job.
All right. I got to see Shogun Assassin on 35mm too.
Ooh.
Yo.
And yeah,
cool.
That's like a movie I'll never get tired of watching.
Same so, here. John, why do you live in New Jersey? Aren't you just eager to just be in a place where this kind of stuff happens all the time?
Yeah, yeah.
And come out to L.A.?
What's going on in L.A.?
You and me, baby. Hitting this town. Painting the streets red.
I have not seen Shogun Assassin as Shogun Assassin in a long time.
Oh, you've only seen The Lone Wolf and Cub?
I saw it first as Shogun Assassin, but ever since I've had The Lone Wolf and Cubs, I don't think I've watched it as Shogun Assassin. I should probably correct that because the first two movies are probably better together as Shogun Assassin.
Well, it's I don't want to say it's psychedelic, but it's much more like surreal and weird, and it and the weird like synthwave score. Like,
yeah, the score totally, is great.
Yeah, I just watched a movie yesterday called Firecracker. It's one of those Sergio Santiago Filipino action movies, and they just blatantly stole the Shogun Assassin soundtrack.
That's fun.
For good effect. And,
yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. So I would have been like, this movie is boring. I mean, it was okay. It had its moments. But then I kept hearing like the Shogun Assassin, and I was just like, fuck yeah, this rules. Like, beat those people up.
Well, that's good. I haven't seen the Shogun Assassin sequel, but you told me that it's just isn't it just the individual Lone Wolf movies just ported over? They're not like mashed together?
Right.
So it picks up at number 3?
Yeah, because Shogun Assassin is the first two Lone Wolf and Cub movies spliced together.
Yeah.
And each one's like its own story. Like the overarching him versus the Emperor story is there, but like each movie he goes on a new adventure.
That's how those movies work, right?
Yeah.
So tonight, because I'm an idiot and I half the time forget to do this, we are doing...
Yeah, Joe, what movies are we doing tonight?
We're doing Life Force.
They watched. They waited. Now their time has come. Out of the depths of space, the ultimate terror. Moving, searching, destroying. From body to body, from life to life, from man to woman. Changing, growing, burning for our life force. Director of Poltergeist, from the special effects creator of Star Trek, the motion picture, Life Force. In the blink of an eye, the terror begins.
And we are doing Inquisition.
Joe, tell the folks at home what Life Force is all about.
An American and British manned spaceship discovers a hidden vessel in the tail of Halley's Comet. When they investigate, what they find leads to their demise and to the potential demise of many on Earth.
And to the potential demise of me as a moviegoer.
Oh my God.
Oh, Erica,
from the person defending fucking hardware,
can you set the table for us, please?
This movie.
Did you say that because she's a woman?
No.
Oh.
Well, I mean, that was an interesting choice of words.
Only came into your head.
That's true. Sorry.
All right.
Sorry. Go continue.
I forgot what I was going to say now. I forgot the movie entirely. I don't even.
Erica, can you eloquently describe your love of Life Force and leave us all in the dust with your acumen?
And also set the table.
Yeah.
It's okay because John can do the dishes.
Life Force is my second favorite Tobe Hooper film. It is everything I love about the 80s, about sci-fi, about B-movies, about flexing your muscles when you're given a bigger budget. It has it's a perfect, like, it's, I think one of the ways I've described it is it reminds me of a lot of older films from Mexico, because it's got something for everyone in there. It's got sci-fi, it's got horror, it's got an apocalyptic ending, it has Matilda May's tits, it has, which, I'm sorry, by the way, Matilda May's tits, like, I think Bed Bath & Beyond should patent those and make, like, a line of her tits. Yeah. Like, I would sleep
just
on
everything, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, they would be sleeping tits?
Yeah, like they'd be waking tits, too.
Like okay. pillows.
Well, I Bed Bath & Beyond, I don't know why my brain goes to bath first or you know, toilet bowl.
See, my mind always goes to Beyond.
It's Bed and Beyond with this, but you can do a bath pillow with your boobs. But I think one of the other things about this, too, is, like, right from the start, like, the opening score, it was Henry Mancini.
Yes, yes.
It's, like, just fucking clubs you over the head, and it's just like, we're ready to go. And then it's, like, this huge derelict and these, like, gargoyle looking shriveled up space vampires, and then it just goes from there. And I recognize all of this movie's flaws, and it has plenty of it, but it more than makes up for it with all of those different things.
Does it?
It does.
Is that
I'm getting the sense that Ryan might be on the opposite side of the table that's been said. Ryan, counterpoint.
This movie, to serve Erica's point, it includes all the things I love in a movie, and it has all of them, and it's one of those rare examples of a movie having all these awesome special effects, all these conceptually cool horror elements, this, like, rad sci-fi premise, this kind of, like, intellectual pursuit of, like, this, you know, doctors and scientists and, you know, politicians and military all kind of trying to solve this problem. You know, these concepts I like all come together for this just absolutely stale, soulless, vapid, boring, trotting piece of non-character movie that there is. It is the cinematic equivalent to taking, like, a perfectly good saltine cracker and, you know, with, like, say, like, some cream cheese and some salmon on it and capers and a little red onion, and then trying to dry my eyes with it as I have an allergy attack and my eyes are tearing because the cat got near me, and the only thing I have to remedy is just this saltine cracker covered in mush that I like.
What?
This movie is so fucking boring for all of its cool special effects and creatures and colors, and the whole third act is awesome because it's so much, it's $20 million getting blown down the drain and an awesome looking fiasco, and it's still just so fucking boring.
John, you are audibly sighing. It's spiking red on the board. Can you
listen?
Give you your two cents.
Do you really want to me to explain why I love this movie so much? This is the most lavish, expensive Third Doctor episode put to film. I am dead serious. Like, it's
totally... my roommate can make a joke about it being a Doctor Who movie, then you've got to be right.
Right. You're right. It's like, and to back up Ryan here, the one thing that makes this movie kind of stale is the fact that you don't have, like, one lead character piecing everything together. Like, it's an ensemble cast where nobody's really lighting the screen on fire. And if this was a Third Doctor episode, you would have had John Pertwee fucking, this is that. Like, the plot points are all there. Even when they go to Patrick Stewart's insane asylum, that's totally like the third part of the serial where, like, oh, the master's involved.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's there's so much to it. And it even does that Nigel Neal thing where it's like, oh, this is a science fiction version of ancient legend, which Doctor Who always shamelessly ripped off Nigel Neal. And if I was smart, I would have written down this a lot better so I could explain it better. But yeah, I'm standing by that this is a very expensive, beautiful Third Doctor. If they were smart, instead of Frank Finlay, they would have casted John Pertwee. He was still alive in 1986. or 1985, and he would have done that role justice. And Peter Firth looks like the Sixth Doctor. Oh, I went down the roles. There was a million British actors in this, so I was like, oh, I can find one that was on Doctor Who, so I can hear Joe sigh. Nobody in this movie was in Doctor Who.
What?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
but the movie itself is so blatantly Doctor Who that it's that was enough right there.
It's its own. I lost what I was gonna say. Fuck that.
Yeah.
Andrew, how did you feel about Life Force?
I really enjoyed this movie. I pretty much agreed with everything Erica had to say. Checks off all the boxes that I'd want going into a movie. Yeah, and I disagree with everything Ryan said.
How in fuck's name did this not put you to sleep?
This is actually the second time watching this movie for me. The first one was a few years ago, and I enjoyed it even more watching it this time. And I know there's two cuts of this movie, or at least two cuts, and I watched the longer version, and I guess there's a point maybe around the halfway mark or after the halfway mark where it gets a little, the pacing kind of slows down a little bit, but not enough to really like put me to sleep or anything.
Right. That's crazy. That's absolutely crazy.
It's a really fun and interesting wild ride. The only problem is it just doesn't happen to fun or interesting wild people. That's the main problem.
Okay.
It is the main problem. It's so weird. I've never experienced that problem so bad that it made me hate a movie. Joe.
Okay, John's point about us not really being saddled in with anyone and there not being any like real wild and crazy people to go along with this wild and crazy movie is a point that I agree with. However, I did very much enjoy this movie. Now, and someone can tell me, you know, if I'm totally like on drugs, but I have not seen Life Force for a long time. Like, okay. It was probably in the 90s, like when I last time wow. I saw Life Force. I remembered a very different movie in my head. Now, is the theatrical cut, because I watched the hour 56 minute version, not the hour 40 whatever minute version. Mm. Is the theatrical cut that much different from this?
No, not really. And I can speak that because the only other version of this I've seen is the theatrical cut within the last couple of years. But from my memory, it didn't serve it. And then I pulled up a comparison of the two. And it seems like the bulk of it, the only difference is some musical cues, some longer takes. And the intro of the movie is a little bit trimmed comparatively.
Okay, because for some reason in my head, and maybe I'm marrying it with another movie, because stuff in the movie I definitely remembered, but I remembered it being more sci-fi, like more like blatantly like sci-fi, like set-wise.
Like more stuff happening in space and whatnot?
Yeah, or more in more like sterile, like kind of like, you know, observational environments and stuff. Mm. So I was very happy that it wasn't like that. I was happy that we're kind of like going all over the place and... you know, I like that we're pulling different characters in and everything, but at the same time, I think maybe we could have used Steve Railsback earlier and maybe right. not Steve Railsback.
Yeah.
I'll just throw in my two cents on Steve Railsback. I love the guy for all the effort he puts in to whatever role he's in because he really tries hard.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it works, and this is one where, like, I don't think he's necessarily, like, miscast or out of place, but some of the takes of things that he says, I'm just kind of like, maybe right. not that one?
when he pops up, like, doesn't he pop up in the spaceship and he's like, well, hey, what's 150 miles long? just appearing through a tube in the floor of the spaceship, surprising the rest of everybody. That line sounded like such a bad take, and they just that's the one they included.
You know what? I didn't mind that take at all. I actually kind of liked it. It just showed them like how surprised at how large this thing in front of them was, and I thought that
really because I got what I read from that was he was like a child, and there were a bunch of cool children all burning ants. With like a magnifying glass, and then the like goofball kid that gets picked on, that like no one else likes because he can only speak in Doctor Who quotes, comes up and is like, "Hey, what's going on, guys? How big is your aunt?"
I just pictured it more like a human being, like, or they're coming in contact with like a giant spaceship, and he's like, "Holy shit, there's a spaceship! Holy shit, it's 150 miles long."
No, but everybody in the room is saying that, and then he just appears from the room below, and he's just like, "Hey, what's going on, guys?"
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it made me laugh. I like that.
Most importantly, Michael Gothard from For Your Eyes Only is in this movie and then disappears. And, like, they set him up to be a main character, and he literally just disappears halfway through the movie.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's like the most jarring thing. Like they have the guy from A Clockwork Orange take his place and go to Patrick Stewart's insane asylum, and I feel like, I feel like he was I guess that was the actor was already replaced, and they just added this one character in.
The single defining characteristic of that character is that he has a turtleneck. And that's how he's distinguished from any of the other characters.
It's a good look.
He has multiple turtlenecks. He has some wardrobe changes, but he only wears turtlenecks. So like,
I like his thick voice. He has a very distinctive voice.
Right. Yeah, the nice British accent to play along well with the other British accents.
That's what makes it a Doctor Who episode.
Oh yeah,
God.
Or one of the things, anyway. I mean, yeah. Despite and like, all right, I'm not gonna go in about UNIT and everything. So we're just gonna stop.
In about UNIT? What
yeah, is UNIT is the military force that the Doctor is the scientific advisor.
He's going
for.
In about UNIT.
I know. Okay, I'm stopping.
I asked. I'm sorry.
United Nations Intelligence Task Force. Jesus.
I love the set design of the space vampire ship.
Oh, yes.
It's really cool. They describe it as going into a giant artery, and then you have the massively overused giant bats that are hanging upside down in there.
Right.
But, like, the outside is cool. It looks like a weird tree of life kind of thing with, like, its perverted roots. And then at the far end of it, it looks like a bat wing. It looks like...
And they resisted not looking like alien whatsoever.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, something I'm very grateful for, because that could have been a very boring alien knockoff set. And instead, they definitely went their own way.
Hooper said that specifically.
Right, right.
Like, that he said, we can't have this look like Alien or Giger or Geiger.
I think both are acceptable. Joe, you would know. Giger or Geiger?
I think the correct pronunciation is Giger, but nobody actually says Giger.
Yeah, I've always said Geiger. I always thought it was Geiger, but I even say my own last name correctly.
Can I do a quick aside here about Deation, since we're on the topic? You brought up Doctor Who. I'm bringing this up.
Okay.
So we went to a dinosaur park, and...
Oh, God.
Listening to going? John pronounce the name dinosaurs is on par with him pronouncing random... You know, names of Italian or Asian directors.
What, like it's a Triceratops or something like that.
Mosaic. Oh my
God. I thought that was a moment shared between us, but.
Sorry, I couldn't help.
We even edited it out of the show.
Yeah. I'm a saint to you, John.
Uh-oh.
Fucking A. That's great. What were the cool dinosaurs? Any
cool ones? Okay. So apparently Dilophosaurus doesn't even have the fucking cool frills that they have in Jurassic Park.
No, that's made up.
And they don't shoot venom either.
No, they do not.
I was fucking
devastated. They were much larger than that, too.
And they probably have feathers.
And Velociraptors are small. They're based off another dinosaur. In Jurassic Park, they're another dinosaur in the Velociraptor family. They just gave them the name Velociraptor because it was a fiercer name than, like, Dinosauplus or whatever it was.
Deinonychus.
Yeah.
God, that Joe sounds like a child.
Oh, Joe knows this. Joe went to the park.
Joe has mentally been in the dinosaur park since he was four.
Okay. Joe, again, your infinite wisdom surprises me.
Yeah, you want stuff about Kareem or Deinonychus, you come to me.
But all the dinosaurs were life-size, so the giant, it wasn't Brachiosaurus, it was the one longer than Brachiosaurus.
Diplodocus.
There. Yes, and it was like, to see that, like, to walk past it was special.
John's in space and encounters that dinosaur. He says, "She's perfect. I've been in space for 6 months. She looks perfect to me."
That's my second favorite line in the movie. The first one is when they're at the redhead's apartment.
Yes.
And
oh, the no.
Yes.
Ways, I'm a natural.
I'm a natural voice.
Yeah. Oh. That is my favorite line.
Yeah, he is the most sleuth-like of them all in his turtlenecks. I could see him being a peeping Tom.
Yeah. I want to start saying that when anyone tells me to, like, just look. And I'm like, I'm a natural voyeur. Just sit back.
And the way, like, he sits down as he's saying it, he's like, oh, no, I'm saying.
Get ready for the show.
Yeah, so I watched this with my roommates, and when NASA approaches the space shuttle from the beginning of the movie and opens it up, and they enter, discover there's been a fire, and there's also space skeletons floating around, there's a jump scare in there, and that actually startled my roommates. That was an effective jump scare, it appears, to this day.
It reminds me of, Joe will get this more than anyone else, in Godzilla 1985, when the guy from the yacht goes onto the one big boat, and he finds the dead body sitting in the chair before the sea lice thing attacks him.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very reminiscent of that.
Yes.
I love that whole, like, cavern in the spaceship with the bat skeletons floating around.
Yes.
Yeah, it's good. I want more bat skeletons.
Yeah, that's a loss, too.
You get one at the very end.
That's true, but
we get one at the end and one in the dream.
I would have loved, like, an action sequence with somebody fighting the bat monsters.
Yeah.
Because I'm a child.
Yeah, if, like, they had, you know, they supposedly had brought one back from the spaceship, and having one of those things kind of, like, reanimate and start, like, wheezing, scream, and coming after you, I think that would have been a lot scarier than one of the, what are they called? What do they call them? The walking shrivel.
The walking shrivel.
The walking
yes,
shrivel.
Which
they call them walkers, right? Isn't that clever?
They were designed by the same guy who did the half lady in Return of the Living Dead, correct?
They look like it.
They definitely look like it. I'm like 99% sure they are.
They are a fun puppet.
I mean, I'm sure, like, since Dan O'Bannon has a writing credit, I'm sure he probably, you know, got a couple of people some work on it. I would guess.
That makes sense because, well, I guess Toby Hooper canceled directing Return of the Living Dead to do this one.
Wow. What a choice. I mean, you know, I was reading a quote of his, and he said he really liked working for the Golem Globus production partners in the
cast. Right, because and it wasn't like you had to go through all these departments in pre-production to get your movie made. They're like, we want you to make this movie. Do you want to make this movie? Okay, here's your budget. Get to work.
Those guys were maniacs. That documentary about them was a lot of fun.
My favorite part of that documentary, if we're talking about the same one, was
Electric Boogaloo.
Yes, they at the end, the very end, the narration was like, the reason they wouldn't be interviewed for this documentary is because they heard we were doing a documentary and decided to make one themselves and had it come out, and they made it and had it come out before that one in typical canon like fashion. Right.
Well, speaking of typical canon fashion, this movie there's two male vampires that kind of appear at one point. You remember that in the Center for Space Research?
Yes.
The European Center for Space Research in England. Those guys get gunned down by like two soldiers that are on duty, but in traditional canon film style, they seem to have guns with a cheat code kind of plugged into it where they just have infinite ammunition and they just blast the
ammunition.
Yeah, if I had said that, you guys would all be fucking piling on me right now.
I just called him out for it.
I know. Okay, yeah. Thank you, Joe.
But they have the infinite ammunition, and they just pull out their clips, and then they throw their clips.
Those were grenades.
Also,
those were grenades.
They are pulling out their clips.
Dude, they grabbed grenades off their belt.
They threw a grenade.
Yeah.
All right.
They shot until their machine guns ran out of ammo, and they threw grenades.
Yeah.
One of those naked space vampire guys is Mick Jagger's brother.
Is that really? True?
Yeah. Chris Jagger, that's a fun right?
Fact.
Yeah. That's his claim to fame, I guess. I can't think of anything else he had been in. Mick Jagger has Free Jack.
I'll look it up.
You know, for all the naked guys in this movie, there should have been more dick.
Yeah, no dick.
I agree.
Maybe
but,
if
I mean,
we
got
more, I would have gotten excited for this movie, but it's not a dick.
All right. The miniatures of the city are great. And what's the best one is when Peter Firth meets back up with Frank Finlay, and in his office, you see this orange background of this destroyed city, like something out of Threads, and it is fucking awesome.
Yeah, all of that looks so cool.
Yeah.
How much money do you think they just spilled shooting the last act of that movie and just getting all the special?
I think that was the majority of the budget, because like all the close up, like the stuff with like the buses blowing up, they just literally built a fake section of London in a back lot somewhere.
You know, it's
blew it up.
What's funny is in some of the special features, they talk about blowing up that double decker bus so much, like it was like supposed to be this huge. I'm sure it was like amazing to watch, and it probably cost a lot of money. But honestly, in the movie, I didn't even really notice that double decker bus.
Yeah, it just happens in the background while Peter Firth's running around with a sword, like Highlander. I feel like if the movie like focused on Peter Firth more and made him more of a lead character, but I think because the movie was riffing on Dracula so much that's why they kind of did the ensemble cast thing. Like you wanted to have your Van Helsing, your Dr. Seward, your Jonathan Harker, Miriam. And it was really neat because it was reversed, because rather than Dracula being this dude that's seducing all the babes, it's this babe that's seducing all the dudes.
I think that's like the one thing that the terrible book did better than the movie is that they have two main characters, and it's Peter Firth's character and Dr. Falada.
Okay.
Going through the whole book, but 80% of the book is them explaining the life force sucking, like the transfer of energy, which is a neat concept. The idea of like energy is neither created nor destroyed, and we all feed off each other's life force, and this is like how that whole thing works. But
now you've read this book?
I have.
Are you familiar with any of Colin Wilson's other material?
I chose not to be after reading this book.
Really? It's bad?
It's not good.
That's what she just said.
Yeah, no, I know that she just said that, but like it's like that bad?
I maybe I'm biased because I read or I saw the movie before reading the book, but because it's so it lacks a lot of action, and a lot of it is so there was one scene in the film where the Dr. Falada is explaining how these vampires work, and the sort of like the energy exchange, like how a life force, you know, how we're all sort of transferring it back and forth from each other constantly. And that explanation, or that particular plot point, is 80% of the book. Like it's them.
It's a bit hard science fiction in that realm.
It's hard science, and not a lot happens. Like, oh, we're going to go here now, and we're going to explain the same thing to another person. It's like we're going to explain it to the prime minister, and then over and over again. Like they just keep changing locations, but they're explaining the same thing over and over.
Over
in the
to
book.
Just different politicians and shit, who probably all react the same.
Yeah,
I've read Mind Parasites, which I really liked, which is similar in what you just described, but it's about like weird psychic phenomena happening that's making people kill themselves. But then I've also read his nonfiction, the book, the Occults, and then also the Poltergeist. which were cool. The occult book was definitely cooler. The other one was seemed a little biased on his intent and belief in paranormal. But I thought he was a cool nonfiction writer, but then also a fiction writer. But I only had that one book to get under my belt. Oh,
okay. Speaking of a cult, I looked up the only other thing of note. He has a few credits, Chris Jagger, but the only other thing of note is that he's an uncredited high priest in Lucifer Rising.
Weird.
Which makes sense because Marianne Faithfull was around for that. So I guess the stones.
Lucifer Rising, isn't that? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. That's Kenneth
Anger. Yeah.
Yeah, yo. Like Jimmy Page did the soundtrack to that, right?
Well, he made a soundtrack, but the soundtrack that everyone knows is Bobby Beausoleil's soundtrack because
that's right. That's that trivia,
right? Because he was originally supposed to do it, and then he went to prison for his murder of what's his name?
The drug dealer guy.
Yeah, the guy that they tried to put, Manson down as being part responsible for that, but really it wasn't. It was just between him and Bobby Beausoleil.
The character Jim Van Bever plays in Charlie's Family.
Right, and so he went to prison, and then it turned out Kenneth Anger did not really like what Jimmy Page did. Like, he thought it was cool sounding, but it wasn't really what he was looking for. And then he because he and Bobby Beausoleil had a falling out, and then he reconciled with him once he realized, I forget what the exact story is, but he thought that Bobby Beausoleil had done something, and then he found out that it actually wasn't true and that he had been blaming him for it all along, like, needlessly. So then he went to him in prison and asked him if he could make it in prison, make the soundtrack, and it took Bobby Beausoleil like 4 years to do it because he actually had to make his own instruments.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And he made them out of the sinew of cellmates.
The warden apparently told him, he said, I'll give you permission to do it, but I want to see you put the electronics and stuff that you've been learning in the prison to work, and you have to make the instruments yourself. So he did.
Back to Space Vampires.
Well, the movie is not called Space Vampires because they were afraid, the Golden Globus bros were afraid that if they called it that, it would sound too much like their standard canon schlock.
Yeah.
And they were really swinging for something a little more creative.
They were. It was a big 70mm production. I think Life Force, it's more of an 80s movie title anyway.
Yes.
Totally. But they wanted a box office hit. They didn't get it, but they wanted it.
Although if they still called it like Space Vampires in London, I'd still watch that movie.
You know, right. If they called it something something in London, I bet they could have captured a bigger audience that just are like, oh yeah, no, everybody's definitely going to be British in this movie.
Yeah, all of the cool stuff happens when it's in London.
Yeah, in fact, they go so far as to the colonel lands in his little space escape pod in Texas, and they're just like, nah, get him over here.
Get this guy back to London.
Homie, they open that up, and he's sitting in there wearing jeans and like a sweater.
Yeah, smoking a cigarette.
Came from space. What in the fuck?
Well, Ryan, why don't you tell us a thing you liked about this movie? Like, what?
Oh, I did all the special effects.
What's
I
your like
all the,
favorite
I like
scene?
That we get. I love that we get two autopsy scenes. Like, not two autopsy. We get the autopsy explosion and then the man in prison explosion.
Yeah.
Like, the man that they gated up. Just back-to-back, two fucking explosions of beings. As if they couldn't drive that point home enough initially. They had to just sandwich those two together. And I love that. And all the special effects. And I love the whole third act. But, like, man, these guys are so boring.
Andrew. You had something you wanted to share about something Patrick Stewart said about Steve Railsback.
Oh, yeah. It was a really small bit of trivia, but apparently Patrick Stewart was on a game or a talk show and was asked when was his first on-screen kiss, and he said it was with Steve Railsback on Life Force.
Yeah, it was.
Wow. Was Patrick Stewart not that active in film? I guess he was just a theater actor.
He was a stage actor.
Okay,
yeah, he had a few film credits by this point, but I don't think it was a lot though.
How has he just remained the same looking person since the 80s?
Because he actually sucked out the life force from Steve Rail's back.
Boom.
And that's why.
That's how basketball was played. I just set that up, teed it off, and you got that shit. And that was good teamwork, John. Good job.
Do you think when they drugged...
Was he whispering?
I don't know.
The fuck?
Everything okay?
What the fuck is going on?
Oh. Yeah. Okay. Wait. Yeah, it's fine. Go ahead. Sorry.
Sorry. I was going to make somebody a joke. I was going to steal somebody's joke, but they were standing right in front of me, so I wasn't going to do it. So I wrote down a thing so they would say the joke, but they're not saying the joke.
You can steal my joke.
It's out of it now. So
how many people are around you right now?
Yeah, what? What?
What the hell just happened?
That John in mid-sentence.
I can't do it now.
You're lucky this about isn't a live medium, John.
I know.
This stays in.
Yeah. It feels like it.
Yo. You could make a drinking game out of all the times you see boobs in this movie.
Yeah, you'd be really fucked up. Boobs.
No, but you can do that hardcore with this movie.
I mean, you could just preemptively just down a Jaeger bottle right when it starts and be done with it.
Yeah.
Imagine that put me to sleep really quickly. And also, Jaeger? Ugh, what the fuck?
Yeah, that's disgusting.
Oh, my God.
That's like the hardware of drinks.
Yo, what is it?
You keep bringing it up. Jesus.
John, it's okay to be wrong.
Andrew, you've watched Hardware recently. Isn't this the superior 80s sci-fi horror movie?
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
Hardware is 1990.
Oh, that is true. That is 1990.
Another reason to hate it.
Yo, Hardware is dope.
But yeah, I get what John's
Joe,
saying.
Life Force or Hardware?
Mm.
Oh, Erica, Life Force or Hardware?
Life Force, but that's not fair.
How is that not fair? They're two motion pictures. I'm pitting them against
each
other.
They're not even in the same. No.
There's no part
you
where
think
Patrick.
If John ran for president and used this kind of rhetoric, like in front of people, that he would just kind of corner
end up
the
like Trump
Trumpian
and win?
Style. Yeah. People are like, I like the cut of this guy's chip.
Yeah. I hate Hardware too. He gets my vote.
Yeah. What a dumpy movie.
It's so good. You're going to love the thing is like I didn't really love I didn't want to say too much cuz maybe listeners, but I didn't really love Color Out of Space, but I have a feeling you're going to walk into that and you're going to cream yourself and you're going to be like, this is what I'm talking about. This is what horror movies need to be. I wish more movies were
so.
Like this.
The trailer.
No, it's going to be because I didn't like it. You're just going to be that way.
John already knows that Richard Stanley is involved, so it's over.
That's not true. I'm not like that.
He's going to be waiting for the Motorhead reference.
Your opening argument of today was exactly that point, John. If you are not like that, you have to pick a fucking side.
Because all right, just I'm not always like that, him. But I do enjoy being a cunt. That's the difference.
Yes, that's,
yeah, we
yes,
know.
Yes, that's okay. That's really it there.
That's why we egg you on.
All right, so thumbs up. From everybody but Ryan?
Yes.
Not even a sideways for Ryan?
We didn't talk about so many cool things. The zombie helicopter stunt attack.
Oh, yeah.
Zombies getting in. Are they zombies? I'm calling them vombies because they're vampire zombies.
Yeah. What about Matilda May turning into some blood monster and then splatting
all
over
the blood
Patrick
blower.
Stewart's head?
Yeah.
I love that scene. Yeah, that was really weird.
That's cool. That stuff's really cool.
Yeah, the effects in this movie are like insane. They are really, really worth watching the movie just by themselves.
Yeah, there's good effects.
Is this everybody's? All right, we talked about this when we did Eaten Alive, and I
put Eaten Alive as my second favorite Tobey Hooper movie. And it makes sense because aesthetically, that's the one I prefer.
Yeah, but I'm changing mine to my second favorite Tobey Hooper movie is Life Force now.
Yeah, I think so. Like, rewatching it, I'm like, this is so good. But I do love Eaten Alive by a lot. So it's hard. They're like neck and neck. It depends on whatever one I'm watching. With the Funhouse being like...
Yeah,
slightly.
With the Funhouse always lurking.
Yeah, right.
All right. So everybody but Ryan, all in favor of Life Force.
Well, I mean, you gotta see it. I would say somebody's gotta see it just to see the special effects, but I'm gonna warn them, they're gonna be fucking bored, so make a drinking game out of the nudity.
Well then, yeah, watch the theatrical cut, I guess.
And we'll be back after this word from our network.
You're listening to the Prescribed Films Podcast Network, home to hundreds of hours of free podcast entertainment. The shows on this network all have a common goal, providing you with the best discussions about movies and other forms of entertainment media. The PFPN hopes to fill your earholes with audio joy. Visit our website with links to all the other amazing shows at www.thepfpn.com. Thanks for listening.
Joe, why don't you tell us about Inquisition?
A timeless tale of 16th century corruption leads to the usual results, torture and devil worship. I love this movie and I am ready to defend it with my life.
Okay, I knew this was going to happen.
I
Joe's
have
like Steve Rails back on the ship, like he's going to defend Matilda May's naked space vampire body no matter what we do to stop her.
Right. And then I'm going to, like, you know, have like dreams about it and make out with it and everything.
And then ultimately impale the movie and yourself.
Yes, because
to save the world.
Yes. I will take this and I will take killers and I will impale them into myself. I have a long history with this movie because it was yet another Sinister Cinema purchase way, way, way back when, and it was during a period where I was like super duper into like this particular genre, which I would call like the Electric Wizard genre, and it was.
Why would you call it that?
But that's a band. It's not an actual Electric Wizard.
I know it's a band, jackass.
Okay. Just like an extension cord coming out of it.
Why does it fall into that category?
Because
or why is that a category?
Because their lyrical content, like back then, was very different from like all the other bands that were doing that, like stoner doom style. Mm-hmm. Like their first of all, their sound was more psychedelic. Their sound was also more nasty.
And dirty sounding,
and all of their lyrics were very, not all of them, but a lot of them were very exploitation and horror based, which nowadays is like a dime a dozen, but back then it was really just them. They were the only band of that ilk that had anything to do with that at all, and it's one of those movies that's like a benchmark in for that. Like if you're into that, you know, that oeuvre, as it were, it goes in there perfectly. And it's one of, like, I'm not like terribly big, which I know we've had this discussion, I'm sure, before, at least amongst ourselves, about Paul Naschy. And I'm not like super big on Paul Naschy, like overall, but it's, I feel like he has like a few good ones and this is one of them as far as I'm concerned.
This is as good as it gets. Then I think my personal feelings towards him stand validated.
No, Hunchback of the Morgue is a lot better than this.
Is that movie good?
Yes.
Yeah.
Erica, well, have you seen Hunchback of the Morgue?
No.
Oh, it's good. It's nasty, though. Remember when I talked earlier about movies where real live rats are burned alive?
Hunchback of the Morgue was so nasty. Okay. It's just nasty.
But it's only one scene. But it's still a good movie.
Okay.
Despite that horrendous.
Okay, so everybody tell me each individually how much you hate it. Go ahead.
I've seen this movie before, and I liked it a lot more then because it was in the middle of the night and I was stoned. That being said...
Exactly. That's exactly the appropriate conditions for this.
Yes. And that being said, rewatching it in the middle of the afternoon, it did not hold up, but I still liked it. And it's nowhere near as good as the two other Witch Hunter movies we've covered, Mark of the Devil and Witch Hunter.
You liked this shit? Mm.
It was... It's dull. It's a bit of a slog, but it's got...
A bit of a slog?
It's got... Listen... It's,
Ryan has no tolerance for anything that does not hit the ground running at a million miles an hour.
It's got...
I like
it's
that got, this is the concept of me these days.
It's got a cringe-inducing nipple torture scene.
Yeah.
Surprise nipple torture scene, too.
You don't even see it coming.
It starts out with an extreme close-up of a maggoty corpse. It has cool, like, devil worship nightmare... hallucination scenes. Mm. And yes, you could cut down 25 minutes of the movie. Yes, everything's very predictable, but and yeah, it has its flaws, and I agree with every problem you're going to say, but I'm fine if I have to watch this movie again 12 years from now.
It's a very specific number.
Right. Well, I mean, like, if I have to watch it again tomorrow, I'll be like, oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah. But, like, 12 years where I'm like, you know what? I'm not so sure of how I still stand on this Witch Hunter. Because that's, like, a genre
So that's enough to make the movie good for you. But then a Lemmy cameo in a movie is enough to make an entire movie bad?
No. That's just... Listen, I haven't watched Hardware in like 10 years, and I remember hating how it looked, felt, sounded, tasted, but that Lemmy cameo is just like so...
It's like forced.
Intrusively terrible that it just...
You hate the tumor that you can visibly see outside.
I might agree with you if Lemmy did a bad job with his dialogue in the scene, but he doesn't. Like, it's not like he's needlessly... I mean, like...
Can we stop talking about Hardware?
No, this episode is about Hardware now.
Thank you, Richard.
So
as long as I've got Andrew on my side, as long as somebody is with me and like trying to understand why you guys see Matilda May in that fucking turd is just ugh.
Hey, here's a question, Erica. Mm-hmm. What did you hate about Inquisition?
So Inquisition to me is diet Mark of the Devil, but I like diet so.
Aspartame.
I know it's bad for you, but I can't help it. I like it, so that's what it is to me. Like I was waiting for it to be over. Like I'm honest. I was bored.
Yeah.
But it makes up for it with, you know, some of the torture devices. That fucking nipple torture. Oof, that is like straight out of. That's just nightmare.
Oh yeah, that made me squirm.
And how like it just happens. It's not even like
yeah,
set up
no
or anything.
Tease. There's no tease.
Right.
You don't
he's
even
just
see
like, oh,
he's just like rip that nipple.
Surprise.
Off.
It's yeah. He plays got your nose with her nipple. And it's just.
I agree. Like, I mean, it's predictable. It's like when she finally has a dream of like who killed her lover, and I was like, are we supposed to be surprised? And
no, you're not supposed to be surprised by anything in these movies.
You know what I like about that though? I like how it's in slow motion and it has this like spaghetti western esque soundtrack behind it with the guitars.
In the dream sequence, you're talking
right.
about the dream
when,
sequence.
When that the one guy comes like a leaping like into frame, like to jump on him with the knife is pretty intense looking.
Yeah,
it's got the blown out guitars and the
freaking
slow motion.
It feels like something from like one of the Django knockoff movies. Like I really like that.
No, it seemed like something that like Tarantino would take and just smash it.
Absolutely, absolutely.
as the coolest part by far.
No, no. When she like
the only part with style and direction.
When they slash the naked girl's throat for the guy in the shitty devil mask that drank her blood is
awesome. It's the lamest throat slashing in history.
Andrew, go ahead, lay into it.
It's not the lamest throat slash. I've seen some Jallo movies where it's like somebody has lipstick across.
That's
their
true.
Neck.
Or no blood.
Yeah, that. Yeah, that's even worse. Or watching a chicken get its throat slashed for real is a lot worse too. We've seen that a lot.
Well, I'm gonna talk about that. I mean, not in great detail, but I have a possible reason for some of that. Yeah. After Andrew vents his hatred.
I'm not going to vent any hatred for this movie.
It seems like no one is.
No, I mean, of course the pacing is slow and it is a bore for much of the movie, but there are certain things that have been mentioned already that I really do like. But that being said, I'm not going to be like those. It's basically two things, like the Satan scenes and the torture scenes. Those aren't enough to justify me just being like, oh, we have a winner here, but it's something I sat through.
I think to be fair, I think the fact that like when it comes to Paul, is it Nashi or Nashi?
Just right? I always say Nashi, but I don't know if it's actually which one it is.
Andrew, what about you?
It doesn't matter for you because if you're mispronouncing it, no one will care.
I say Nashi.
Okay, Nashi. I remember watching a ton of his movies when they all came out on DVD like 15 years ago and finding every single one of them boring so that when I come across one that's like, oh, okay, this one's okay, I'm like, I'm already like grading it on a curve.
John, you know, did you buy that box set from me?
I can't recall, but it might be that's a possibility.
All right.
A lot of the movies of his that I like are ones that are actually not like readily available. I mean, they might be now because I haven't really kept up much with Blu-rays because I'm poor, but it's like...
Isn't this like the one Blu-ray you own?
Yes. Because I got it when I got my tax return. I saw it for $9. I was like, gotta have it. Some of the ones that aren't as widely distributed, I think, are really good, like The Hanging Woman.
Hunchback of the Morgue is great. It's like a legit, like, good one.
Is this movie... I haven't seen Horror Rises from the... What is it?
Horror Rises from the Tomb.
Now, I saw... I watched the beginning of it. Is it essentially a very similar movie to this? Like, kind of Witchfinder?
No.
No?
Okay. No. It's like Black Sunday a lot.
Oh, because it goes into like modern, like more modern times, right?
But Panic Beats is the sequel that came out in the 80s, which is also a very cool movie, at least to me.
And when I say it's very much like Black Sunday, I just mean plot, not in like style or talent or
quality.
Yeah.
Yeah, but who expects that? Maybe that's my problem or my blessing is I just look at everything and go... I don't expect anything from this.
You say that every time we hang out.
You know, I mean, that's why Joe Talley...
Silently to myself.
I can see it on your face, though.
This was the first one that he directed himself. Because ones that he had done previously, like even ones that he has writing credits for, because he actually wrote or at least partially wrote some of the scripts for a lot of the, at least the horror stuff that he did. He did not direct until this one. And the guy who he was in the saddle with a lot as a director was a guy named Leon Klimovsky, who is from Argentina. And who was a dentist, by the way, and then suddenly one day decided, you know what? I want to be a movie maker. Mm. And then he ended up in Spain somehow and immediately actually started working on like genre stuff. Like that was what he wanted to do. Like he started working on stuff that, that would be up our alley, like not really so much like popular cinema that you would have seen at the time. And Nashi said he always liked working with him But the one problem he had was that he always felt like he rushed through everything too much. And he knew that part of that was because of like time and budget constraints. But he always felt like a lot of the movies needed to have another take of this scene or that scene. And he would have, you know, preferred that they had gotten to do that. So he made he said to himself when directing this movie that he was not going to do that. And then he found himself doing that.
You always become what you hate.
Right. So he sort of like learned a bit of a lesson, which I think pays off down the line. Like when he starts doing stuff in the 80s and some of the later stuff that he does, I think it pays off because I think that you kind of see him noticeably, like if you're a Nashi aficionado, I think you see him actually get better as a director when some time has passed, which is natural because obviously you do something enough, you know, you should get better at it unless you're like Joe D'Amato and you just don't give a fuck anyway. But that's another story.
I've always read and I've always heard Nashi aficionados compare him to great auteurs like Jean Rollin and Andy Milligan. And, if those are who you're getting compared to as an auteur, then there's something wacky going on with your career.
I will defend Jean Rollin at least somewhat. I will not defend Milligan.
I haven't seen enough of his movies to know, but I hated The Grapes of Death, but I liked the vampire one we watched for John's birthday.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
And also for Andy Milligan, that one with the Frankenstein was kind of fun.
Monstrosity.
That was a little atypical from what I had seen in his movies.
Did anybody recognize Renover, the guy with the fucked up eye?
Oh yeah. What was he in?
He's in Who Can Kill a Child.
Yes. Okay.
And Cutthroats 9.
Yo. Yeah. No kidding.
Yeah, Cutthroats 9 is great.
Oh my god! Wow. That's a fantastic movie.
Yeah, he. I guess he's really good at playing a scumbag.
Mm. And Who Can Kill the Child? Wasn't he the one who had he walked to his daughter killing him or something like that?
I think so. Yeah,
voluntarily.
There's not too many adults in that movie.
Yeah, that's true.
I haven't returned to it since we covered it, which is what, our first episode.
That was our first episode.
Fuck.
All those years ago.
What year
was
that?
That's a movie with a lot of versions of it to revisit.
So that was 2017.
Fuck.
Yeah, that was last decade.
Yeah. We've been doing this for more than one decade. Wow.
That's not quite how decades work, but I think I see what you're getting at.
Yeah, well, I can still... Yeah. Yeah.
2 months ago was 10 years ago.
So I'm watching Inquisition and the first Witch's Sabbath scene comes up, which is funny because I remember, John, when I lent you my Sinister Cinema DVD, because I'd given you a bunch of stuff and that was one of them, and you looked at it and you were just like because on the cover it has a picture of the devil guy, and you were like, please tell me that this thing is in this movie.
and it is.
And I reassured you that it was, and you were very happy about the fact that you would be seeing that in the movie.
That's how I remember watching. I remember that time period where I was looking for something to go with the joint I had, and I was like, oh, 70s. Right. You know, Witchfinder devil hallucination movie. Okay, this will definitely
it's
perfect for us.
The electric wizard genre.
Yeah, right. But for a movie from the fucking 70s, tonally and aesthetically, to me, it feels like it belonged in the 50s or
yes,
the 40s.
Which is a lot of what his stuff is, because that's kind of what he liked.
I hate that.
We know. You've made it
like
readily
a movie
apparent.
From that time that does it right. You know, give me March of the Wooden Soldiers any day of the week. I'm gonna have fun.
So I'm watching Inquisition, and the Witch's Sabbath scene. The first one just comes up, and I'm watching this, and my wife is sitting with me, and she looks up from her phone, and she sees, you know, like the way the table is set and everything, and she sees like the dancing women and you know, Satan man sitting at the table, and she's just like, this would be your fucking living room if you had your way. I said, yes, and there is still time.
I mean, yo, Joe, don't sell yourself that short. I'm sure that if you want that living room, you can even find a way to make a more fully furnished and articulate version of the room that they were trying to achieve within the movie.
No, I just want the fog.
Yeah.
The table and the fog is fine with me. I don't need furniture.
I'll sit down in some weird throne with some goat devil mask on all day.
Yeah, I've had that dream too. Just you laughing John. At me from your golden throne.
Just thumbing through an X of the Unspeakable lyric sheet. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, while you're bellowing Doctor Who quotes at me.
Yeah.
Now, why does everybody move so slowly in this movie?
No hurry.
To pad out the runtime.
This is the way it was back then.
The whole movie? Why make the movie? Why make the movie if everybody's going to be walking around all slow?
Yeah, Proto Plague?
Proto Plague, yeah. There we go.
Proto Plague?
That's in my headcanon now.
I don't know. I made that up.
Don't feed John ideas like that. Yeah.
It's got a gloomy ass ending that you all see coming. And like the dude's like, oh, I'm going to be there for your death. Like, never mind. The plague's coming. I got to go prepare.
Yeah.
And the leeches that he uses, are they like real leeches or are those small snakes?
No, those are leeches.
Yeah. Okay. I thought they were big ass leeches, I guess.
Well, they weren't fed up, so...
Well, yeah, when they're full of blood, they're nice and fat.
Yeah, there's a weird, what looks like a little bit of a cut, so I think that potentially the ones that were actually on him might have been fake, but then when he goes to... Right. When you see his hand go down to the bowl, it looks like there's like an almost well-done cut where you almost miss it, but you kind of see it where he kind of wiggles his hand and drops one in. So there might have been a switcheroo for that.
I remember the water just like becoming pink, you know, like immediately.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fine.
The fuck?
I have somewhere buried by time and dust and junk. Somewhere. I have a tape that I made a 3-song demo tape of really sloppy, like 70s, like Sabbath style stuff. And I had a running theme throughout it where I used all samples from this movie. If I can find it, I'm going to listen to it and potentially decide if I'm going to make it listenable to other people. Because go ahead.
Are there any good samples? Like, do you have juicy bits?
It's like the Satan stuff. Like when like the head witch lady is like giving her the pep talks and whatnot. Used some of those.
I wonder if your subtitles, or I'm sorry, not subtitles, your dubbing was the same kind of dubbing I experienced.
Mine is the same dubbing that was on the DVD I always had. So I guess that was the actual, like, whatever the American dubbed release was. What did you get?
I had the fan subs.
Yeah, so.
And how did,
like, I don't know if the fan subs were actually fan subbed by anybody or if they were just, like, sourced from material.
So what did that come out like?
Just bad, but it didn't sound like fan subs, but it just didn't, you know, like, it just all sounded wonky. It sounded like when you watch like a bad 50s movie and then they're dubbed by people who are clueless to how actors behave and deliver lines. And yeah, I just,
sorry,
go for it, you got better things to say.
In the beginning, it says it movie, they're like from France, or they're in France, but it never not looks like Spain.
Yeah.
They're well traveled over there, John. You familiar with the landscapes of both of them?
Yeah, but no, that's what I was trying to take. Like, they the movie says it's taking place in France.
Yeah.
Or did I miss something? Is it France, 16th century?
Well, I don't know.
Spain.
I mean, they share a border, so I guess it depends on where it's happening.
I just think of I don't think of France with the deserts.
I definitely agree with you. Like, it never enters my brain that it's not Spain. Just based on movies that I've watched, I don't, you know, not like I've ever been anywhere.
Especially when they're speaking Spanish, which is the way I watched it.
So you did not do a dub at all?
No.
Okay.
No, I did not.
Has anybody got any favorite torture marathon?
Blu-ray?
Yeah, the Mondo Macabro Blu-ray.
Word. What track did you all use?
The it was subtitled.
Subtitled.
Wait, you didn't have the dub on that, or you just chose to do the sub?
I just put it on as it started. You know, it just started with the subtitle. Like,
we've come too far. It already started.
Yeah. I mean, like, whatever. I was fine reading subtitles. Mm. It was the most intellectual exercise I was going to get from the movie.
Yeah.
But like, you can learn about how, you know, people suffer.
I know. I
you know how I suffer, Joe? You know how I suffer? It's watching movies like this.
What, wonderful movies like this?
Ryan, this wonderful. Or Life Force?
Life Force.
Life Force.
Okay, yeah.
Does anybody have anything else they would like to say about Inquisition?
There's not much to say about Inquisition. Let's be honest here.
Paul Naschy is a bulky man, and he just wrote himself into this movie so he could fondle women.
He actually wasn't really, like, all that big on being in the movies for a while.
Well, he loved his werewolf movies. He did.
Yeah, the werewolf movies were, like, really close to his heart. But, like, when it came to the other stuff,
arms look like that.
Well, yeah, kind of, yeah, because he actually, like, said, like he knew that he was kind of built for it,
yeah.
And that he had, like, you know, the look and everything. So he was all about that. But
if I had bothered taking notes about this movie, his hairy ass fucking arms would have been written in bold-ass black letters.
What's your favorite Paul Naschy werewolf movie, Joe?
I don't know.
I don't think you can tell them apart.
I'm not very fond of the werewolf movies, for the most part. Like, I know that there's one that I like. It's one of the later ones. Like, one of the ones that was in, I think it's in, like, 80, 81. But I don't remember the title of it, and they all kind of run together because it's literally like the same movie almost every time. In fact, the one that I'm thinking of, I'm pretty sure, is a remake of the first one that he did, I think.
Well, what good
Erica,
does
have
that
you ever
do?
Gone down the Paul Naschy route? Mm-mm. Never? Is this the first one you've done?
Yep.
Ooh,
will you continue down this route?
Probably not. I mean,
Hunchback of the Morgue is good.
Do Hunchback of the Morgue. It's grimy. It's like his Fulci movie.
Do The Hanged Woman, too.
The Hanged Woman.
Okay.
Joe, do you like Inquisition or Blood on Satan's Claw?
Both.
Well, like, which one do you like more?
Blood on Satan's Claw.
Come on. Yeah.
He also has a giallo-styled one called... Blue Eyes of the Broken Doll, which is actually a really good non-Italian giallo.
What's his really violent, like, Eurocrime movie that kind of turns into a cannibal movie? Isn't it like Carnival of Beasts or something like that?
Something like that. I can't remember the title, but that sounds close.
That's the one
me.
That I've always been like, okay, I'm going to watch that before I put a full verdict on Paul Naschy.
Well, maybe we can watch that on a future episode.
Okay, we'll save it. We'll save it for. We should wait a bit. I can't Naschy out again.
So, like, next
too
month.
Too much Naschy.
Well, we're quickly running out of Dan O'Bannon. So.
Oh yeah, Dan O'Bannon redeemed himself for the Life Force screenplay.
Redeemed himself?
Yeah, after the Resurrected.
The Resurrected was later.
I know, but I mean for us,
you can
in our timeline.
Erica, what are your feelings on The Resurrected?
I haven't seen it.
Okay.
Don't.
We're sort of like in the TARDIS where we jump in different timelines of the horror cinema. So 1990 may be the future from Life Force, but it's the past for us.
Well, shit, does this wrap us up? Did we all just crap on this? What did we do? Everybody was nice to this movie?
What else can you do with something like this?
Yeah, it's a very difficult thing to talk about.
It'll be buried with me. I'm going to have... The funeral is going to be me with this and various other unpopular things that only I love, or at least love, you know, in absence of shared love with people that are my friends. And it will be presided over by the Satan Goat Man and Angel Blake. And then with any luck, I will be buried or entombed next to Azza from Black Sunday.
You've given this a lot of thought.
Yeah, it's all I think about.
All right, everybody, why don't we say our goodbyes?
All right.
Contact information.
Yeah, we need the contact information first.
Andrew, tell us about that. Oh, yes, the contact information. you can find us on Instagram if you search for Late Night Psychorama.
And how do you spell night?
That is, night is spelled N-I-T-E. And
why is that?
I don't know. Why is that?
We've said this multiple times, but John, yeah, why is it spelled N-I-T-E?
Because when you'd go to the like old convenience store or video store and there were those neon signs where it's like open late or all night.
Yeah.
To squeeze in
open late
that word with just four letters, you spelled it N-I-T-E. Yeah. And it just makes me think of being at the video store late.
Because it was cheaper for neon signs or something.
Right. Yeah.
Do people really need that explained to them, though? Like, is it that uncommon now that people...
It's going
to
get cut out.
I'm kidding.
Hey, let's wrap this shit up. For real, though, if you're listening to this, you like this show, like or leave any sort of positive review on any of the platforms with which you listen to the show. But furthermore, you should definitely, if you like this show, check out Customers Also Watch. It's a fantastic
show. Oh, yeah, Erica, you
want to
plug your show in?
Yes, plug it in.
it's on all the podcast things. I review movies on Amazon Prime, following the Customers Also Watch list, and also do monthly episodes with my friend Rebecca, getting her caught up on horror movies. John and I actually recorded one earlier today about my friend Rebecca had to watch 3 Dario Argento movies, so that'll be coming out probably before this one does. Because I think...
You said they have to be out by Tuesday.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Which ones did you do? Or are you not allowed to say that yet?
Oh, no, it's fine. Suspiria, Deep Red, and Phenomena.
Nice.
And what's the following? Instagram, Customers Also Watched. Facebook and Twitter is CAW Podcast. And Letterboxd is Also Watched.
Definitely do check all those out.
We need reviews, people. Give both of our podcast reviews, please. All right. Plenty of awkward silence to be edited
out. You can always count on Paul Naschy to suck the energy out of the room.
This is true. Wait, did we give thumbs up or thumbs down? We didn't even fucking do that.
Yeah, we just wanted to get out. Yeah. We just wanted to leave.
It's Paul Naschy. Yeah, you know.
Thumbs up?
It's only me. Thumbs
up. No, I'd still give it a thumbs up. I like
really?
It.
Really? I give it like
it's
a soft.
Very,
yeah. Just like if, you know.
A flaccid thumbs up.
I don't
is what
have
you
anything
normally
that's
say.
Flaccid, Andrew. But I would give it a, you know, half.
Yeah.
Like three quarters.
Yeah.
I still.
Yeah.
I'd give hate it myself after watching it. It takes a lot for me to be, you know, a full thumbs down.
It had to be like 10 things I hate about you.
Just give it a flaccid sideways and then just jiggle it around a little bit.
What if the
movie where cinema began
getting torn off?
What sentence is that? Is water running? What is going on?
That's me
right
peeing.
What?
On the floor?
Yeah.
What is happening? All right, everyone. Good night.
Bye.
Good night. God bless.
zero to me, 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 to me.
Suspect pulled up in garage.